Blog Talk Radio.
Amazing show for you. So if you have not yet done so, I want you to take a few minutes, tweet your friends, text your friends, call your friends and your neighbors, even that person you have not spoken to for a while. This is your opportunity to reach out to them and tell them to tune into this show, because this show is going to be rocking your world. It's going to ruffle some feathers, but I tell you, at the end of the broadcast, you are going to be so happy that you invested the time in listening to the show. Again, I want to welcome you. I am your host, Dynamic Daphne, and as always, it is an honor and a privilege. Each and every day I'm on the broadcast and realize that people have made the decision and have made the choice to listen to my show. And I tell you, I am just so excited. This month, the 29th of March, is my anniversary, and I'm so busy doing the show, I had completely forgot until the listeners began sending me congratulation messages on social media. I tell you, I have committed listeners to the radio show. I have committed listeners to my TV show, and I am just so blessed to have all of you. I want to tell you the chat room will be up momentarily. The number to call, to be part of the conversation is 646-915-8166. 646-915-8166. And as always, there's no need to wait for the end of the conversation. We choose to include you. So you have a question, you can call in and ask your question, and we will address it during the conversation. I've been announcing that I need volunteers. I need volunteers for the radio show, and I also need volunteers for the TV show. I've gotten an opportunity to start a new show in the Bridgeport area, And I'm looking for crew in that community to be trained. So if you are interested, you can send me a message here on the radio site, or you can email me at dynamicdaphne1@gmail.com or reach out to me via telephone 203-794-6208. We are also looking for some people who are interested in earning some extra money to sell some advertisement for our show. Because we are heard globally, you can sell advertisement wherever you are. I am telling you, I'm so excited because we are 90-something plus now listenership. And I think that is a blessing for a new show who is only 4 years old. So it simply says that the investment that we are making each and every day here on the radio that we get on, it is really touching lives. So again, I honor each and every one of you, and I show gratitude to you. I tell you, I announced 3 weeks ago that I felt led to start a series called Millionaire Mindset. And each week I'm going to have a different experts on. But I tell you, I am so honored that my beginning act is a person who is known globally, and momentarily I am going to read his bio for you. He's been hanging out in the virtual green room with me for a while. So he's right here, ready to rock and roll with me. And I tell you, we could not have asked for a better starting act than this person that is coming on. Because I can say he's been my mentor from a distance. For a few years ago, I met him at the FraserNet conference and was just bought into his teachings and his guidance and all of his insight. So when he said yes to doing the show, I felt very privileged and honored. So without any further delay, if you just give me your undivided attention, I am going to attempt to read as much of my expert's bio. Dennis Kimbrough. Few individuals impact the day-to-day management of organizations and institutions as Dennis Kimbrough. A tireless educator, best-selling author, and business school professor, Dr. Kimbrough is universally characterized as an authority on leadership, wealth, and success. As one of today's top business speakers, he has documented and shared his principles and insight on peak performance with thousands of followers around the globe. As a lecturer and researcher in the field of management, entrepreneurship, and human potential, Dr. Kimbrough encourages his readers to look within to extract the keys that underline all accomplishment. He received his BA degree from the University of Oklahoma and an MA and doctorate from Northwestern University, where he studied wealth and poverty among underdeveloped countries. Dennis is married and the father of three daughters, Kelly, Kimberly, and Mackenzie. His honors include various awards bestowed by the business community, as well as Dale Carnegie Personal Achievement Award. Currently, Dr. Kimbrough teaches on the faculty of Clark Atlanta University School of Business Administration. In 1996, he served as one of eight national judges for the prestigious Ernest & Young USA Today Entrepreneur of the Year, held in Palm Springs, California. As a certified Napoleon Hill Science and Success Trainer and Leadership Coach, Dr. Kim Rose's writings have influenced readers from the streets of Melbourne, Australia, Johannesburg, South Africa, to Seoul, South Korea, to Yikawiki, I am sure I messed that one up, Iceland, to the boardrooms of General Motors, Walt Disney Corp, Citicorp, Frito-Lay, Eli Lilly, Apple Computer, ExxonMobil, Nike, and the Gallup organization, to name a few. Ladies and gentlemen, the rest of Dr. Kim Rose's bio is posted on the website, and I encourage you to go there and familiarize yourself with the rest. I think I've gave you enough for you to realize that today you are getting the best of the best. Dr. Kim Rose.
Daphne, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an honor. It's an honor. It's an honor. I am so privileged that the rest of my listeners will be able to get just a taste of why I rave about you and your work so much. So thank you, thank you, thank you for everything that you do to let us understand that there's absolutely no reason why we ought to be settling for mediocrity. So I want for you to just take the mic at this time and just tell people a little bit more about why you are so passionate about what you do and anything else that your bio did not tell you that you want to tell them, sir. Please take the mic.
Well, I'm just it's just a continuation of what I've done over the my adult life. When I got my fancy PhD degree from Northwestern University, Daphne, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I certainly knew what I didn't want to do, and that's critically important. Number one, I didn't want to, go into the corporate world, though I did work in corporate America for more than 12 years, like many of my colleagues. Number two, I didn't want to work in the federal or the public sector. Many of my colleagues, when they finished from Northwestern, they did exactly that. And ironically, number three, at the time, I didn't want to teach, though as you read my bio, all your listeners now know that I teach at Clark Atlanta University School of Business, and I'm fulfilled in that role. But primarily, all I wanted to do was a continuation from my PhD, from my dissertation at Northwestern University. I wanted to find out the difference, why one person succeeds and another fails, why one individual is rich and wealthy while another is impoverished. And so after I graduated and I started working, I spent vacation time, sick days, taking any time that I can from my job, going around the country interviewing successful African Americans for a book that I was writing. And lo and behold, after a number of years, I was asked to write an article for Success Magazine. And that article that I wrote eventually found the desk of W. Clement Stone, who at the time was one of the wealthiest individuals in the world and the president of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. Now, your listeners may not know exactly who Napoleon Hill was. He was America's most prolific self-help writer. He wrote 16 books in his lifetime, Daphne, and six of his books, you can go to any Barnes & Noble or Amazon right now and purchase them. At the time of his death, and you know that his all-time classic, Think and Grow Rich, published in 1933, and we're talking in excess of 15 million copies out there. At the time of his death, Napoleon Hill was attempting to write a black version of that all-time classic. He got 100 pages into the manuscript, died of a stroke. He was into his mid-80s. And on November 4th, 1986, the day that W. Clement Stone asked me to come to Chicago because he wanted to meet me after that article was published in Success Magazine, he really changed my life. He asked if I could complete, update, and finish that manuscript. to make a short story even shorter, I did, and that book, that manuscript, became Think and Grow Rich, or Black Choice.
Black Choice, that's right, which was my first book I purchased from you, and I loaned that book to somebody, and I'm still to get it back from them. And I tell you, and I listened to you just set the stage for us, Dr. Kimbrough, about not wanting to be a teacher. And I am going to take the audacity of saying, I don't think if you had the opportunity to teach at a place where you were not grooming business leaders to go out there and make a difference in the business arena, if you would have taken that position, regardless of how much it was going to pay you. So I just thank you again for your commitment and your consistent and dedication and devotion in knowing it doesn't matter what is happening around me.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Daphne. I mean, let's face it. No one chose to be here. I didn't choose to be here. You didn't choose to be here. The bottom line is that we were chosen. And that idea alone means that we are armed with a purpose. You know, so many folks live day to day. So many folks don't know what they're going to do, you know, week to week, year to year. We are at our best when we are pursuing a goal. We are goal-seeking organisms. As I tell my students all the time, if you don't have a goal, you got to make it your goal to find a goal. And that is predicated upon your unique gifts and your area of excellence. Sooner or later, you said prior to me coming on the show, I heard you in the background that you were trying to find a way to monetize everything that you're doing. Well, Daphne, you got to ask yourself three critical questions. Question number one, what is it that I love to do? What do I have a passion for? What can I throw my whole heart and soul into? Question number two, what would I do for free? If no one ever paid me a dime, if no one ever gave me financial reward for my effort, what would I do for free? Because when you're doing what you love to do and you would do it for free, your work is your play. And if your work is your play, you'll never work a day in your life. So many times I love the anecdote when I had an opportunity to interview John Johnson, the publisher and founder of Ebony Magazine. And I was in his Chicago office, and I asked him, I said, Mr. Johnson, if you weren't publishing Ebony Magazine, what would you be doing with your life? And right before him, he had a mock cover of an upcoming issue, and he grabs it, and he just starts rubbing his hands over it, and he looks at the colors, and he says, I love magazines, I love the feel, I love the textures, you know, this is what I want to do with my life. How can you beat that individual? You can't.
Beautiful.
I mean, he is
beautiful.
Completely engaged in his labor of love. And then last but not least, if you cannot answer those two questions, go to those people who you respect and admire and ask them, what do you see me as? What do you think I would be good at doing? That's why we are here, to not only find our purpose, but to share our purpose with a waiting audience.
Right. You know, thank you so much. That's an affirmation, again, that I've heard Dr. Miles Monroe and I, prior to really harnessing and tuning into my purpose and calling on my why for being on this earth. I had a similar conversation with Dr. Miles Monroe because I was like going around chasing my shadow. At the time I was working as a nurse, and I didn't know why I had such a void inside of me. I was doing what I was doing, and I was doing it good. I was excellent at what I was doing, but there was still a void. And it was not until Dr. Miles Monroe mentioned to me about purpose and calling. I've never heard that before. I had no understanding. And when I began pursuing what that meant and to really prioritize my why for being here, I can get up every day with pep in my step. It doesn't matter how bad the snow is here in Connecticut. I have a zeal and an excitement to go out there to make a difference in other people's lives. And
and that's what you just said. I didn't mean to cut you off, Daphne.
Yeah.
You said
no,
you wanted
fine.
To make a difference and you wanted to find your calling. Dr. Miles Monroe is exactly right. A career is what we're paid for, 9 to 5, 40-hour work week. But a calling is what you're made for. And that's why you had pep in your step. And that's why you were completely fulfilled. And that's why you are completely engaged. But you said it, not me, Daphne. You said that's why you can make a difference. There's only four things in life you want to do. Number one, you want to make a difference. Number two, you want to make a difference with others who want to make a difference. Number three, you want to make a difference with others who want to make a difference doing something that makes a difference. But number four, Daphne, you want to make a difference with others who want to make a difference doing something that makes a difference at a time when it makes all the difference in the world. And now that time for you is right now. You don't know how many lives that you're going to impact right now through
That's
your blog, talk radio.
You
don't know what it holds. You know, all you're there is to go ahead and share your gifts and share your talents with a waiting audience. And that's all that I have done over the course of my life.
Yes. And, you know, you just said something so profound, because the reason why in this time collaboration is so important is because we must understand that there's none of us that can do anything by ourselves. All of us can change the world, but we can never do it by ourselves. And this is why it is so important that we reach out and collaborate and partner with other people. Because it doesn't matter how much we all know, we cannot do it by ourselves. So I tell people, when you listen to this conversation today, I want you to listen with an intention that you are going to make a commitment to make a difference in any of the four areas that Dr. Kimrow just mentioned. So,
you know, you're exactly right in terms of, you know, connecting and collaboration. You know, the average individual in our society knows 270 other people. That's how many folks will show up to your funeral if the weather is clear. But the bottom line of it is, you know, why would you go to a seminar? Why would you go to a conference? You said that you met me at FraserNet. Why would you take in information? Why would you, you know, sit and listen to a speaker? It's not to hear the speaker. It's not to attend the conference. It's not to attend the seminar. The reason why you would go, Daphne, is to meet the person in front of you, behind you, to your left and to your right. That's the only way that you're going to build and grow and develop through others. Now, I'm not making light of the fact that one is the most powerful number in the world. You and I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, one is the most powerful. I mean, one Sunday sermon can change the entire week for you. One smile as you're walking down the street can lift your spirits. One kind word will make a difference in your day. I mean, one mother brought you in this world, and one God blew breath into your lungs. I'm not making light of the number one, but anything that we are going to do in terms of greatness, in terms of reaching our goals, reaching our objectives, is always going to be done through others.
Yes, and we have to learn to turn that one into 11.
<laughs> <laughs>
We can see that one as 11 instead of one, Dr. Kimura. I'm telling you, we got to do that. And we are going to be going back and forth. We're going to be touching some of your writings, and we are just going to be going through your experiences and everything. I noticed that very few people can honestly say that they have touched lives across the globe as you have done. Would you like to tell us a little bit about each country that you have been?
I've been in quite a few. from Iceland to Singapore. I mean, you name it, Canada, both sides of Canada. This summer I'll be in Africa as well as Australia, England. So, yeah, I've been in my fair share. But, you know, folks are hungry. They want this information, and the timing couldn't be better for you to chase your dream. Daphne, over the course of a 20-year career, no matter who I interviewed, and we're going to switch the subject to the Wealth Choice, a book that I just released, but I want to share this with you. No matter who I interviewed, I found four common chords in all these men and women. Mm-hmm. Number one, they dream big dreams. They had a dream, a passion, something they desperately wanted to accomplish in life. Number two, these men and women were inner-directed versus outer-directed. In other words, they weren't so quick to believe well-meaning friends or family members who said, you can't do this, you can't do that. They walked to a beat of a different drummer.
Mm.
And that's why Robert Frost, the old poet, was so apropos when he wrote years ago, two roads diverge in the wood, and I took the one less traveled by.
Mm.
In other words, Daphne, you're unique. You cannot right. succeed being like everybody else.
Yeah.
Differentiation is the key.
That's
I mean, we
right.
live in a country that rewards differentiation,
mm.
that rewards and honors different and unique. And what am I trying to say? Sooner or later, you got to tell mediocrity. Sooner or later, you got to tell average. Sooner or later, you got to tell the status quo to go to hell. Sooner
right.
or later, who's talking about you? What is the buzz about you? What is the hype about you?
Mm-hmm.
People want to be around difference makers. Differentiation
right.
is the key.
That's
Number
right.
three, they dedicated themselves to lifelong learning. What you are doing in your community. I mean, you're a teacher, Daphne. You're
mm-hmm.
spreading the word. You're
mm-hmm.
spreading the gospel.
Yeah.
You know, I love that parable, and it's really not a parable, that story in the Bible where Jesus, when he was 12 years old, he was missing for 3 days, and when his family finally found him, they said, Jesus, where have you been? Don't you know we've been looking for you? And he was
mm-hmm.
sort of shocked. He said, looking for me? He said, there's only one place that I could be, and that's, you know, about my father's business.
That's what I'm talking about.
And what is
mm-hmm.
and what is our father's business? Raising consciousness.
That's
right.
That's
what you're doing, Daphne.
That's right. Thank you.
Raising
Thank you.
Consciousness, taking an idea from here to there,
mm-hmm.
growing and developing. Is there a
mm-hmm.
key to success? Is there a key to prosperity? Yes. And what is it? It's raising consciousness.
Raising consciousness.
Personal growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be tomorrow what you're today. And I'm not saying be better than or be superior than anybody else.
Mm-mm.
No, just be a little bit better than what you used to be.
To be, that's right.
And then last but not least, these men and women flat out refuse to fail.
Mm.
I'm not saying they didn't fail. I'm just saying that failure was never a viable option for them. Those
Beautiful.
Are four chords, and I, like
Beautiful.
I said, over a 20-year period, and I'm constantly interviewing
Beautiful.
Folks, and I'm ready to give you some information on the new book
Beautiful.
That's been out
yes.
for not even a month, but
right.
Taking This Country by Storm, The Wealth Choice, Success Beautiful. Secrets of Black Millionaires.
Beautiful. And I wanted to ask that question before we lead into this, because as I said to the listeners before, I want them to listen with intention, because we keep saying America is the place of big dreams. And yes, it is. But we have to make a choice of what the big dream is going to be for each of us and just embrace and harness our uniqueness. And this is a perfect segue into the wealth choice.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Like I said, here's a book, Daphne. It's been out for a little bit more than 3 weeks, and it's in the top 10 in terms of business and finance books on Amazon. For a 7-year period, all I did was go around the country and interview, held focus groups, and surveyed black millionaires, African-American wealth creators over a 7-year period. I asked them 118 questions in my survey. I had face-to-face and phone interviews with roughly 60 individuals. And then I had 6 focus groups around the country in which no one was in there but black millionaires. If you weren't 7 figures or above, you did not get into the room. I had one
Wow.
focus group in North Carolina. I had 3 focus groups in Atlanta. I had a huge one in Washington, D.C., a small one in Nebraska, and an even smaller one out in Las Vegas. And what I can tell you, Daphne, over a 7-year period, I have found the DNA to black wealth. And wealth is not a function of who your parents are. It's not a function of race. It's not a function of condition. It's not a function of circumstance, where you were born, what side of the tracks that you grew up. You know, it's not a function of how the cards were dealt. But what wealth is a function of choice. Wealth
mm-hmm.
is a function of decision. It's a function of creativity, innovation, effort, faith, and discipline.
You know, I'm sitting here and I am appalled because I look and I listen and I hear you say 7 years, 7 years, and every day I walk out, I hear people talking about, oh, the economy is this and economy is that. Yet for 7 years, you set up this focus group across the country, and no one was admitted in that room unless they were seven-figure and above. So let's push the myth aside about the economy. Once you make the right decision, you are going to get the right results.
The economy is always in mind, Daphne.
We're not here.
We haven't been sent here to set this world right. No, we've been sent here to see this world rightly. And who is the most pitiful, who is the most dangerous man or woman in the room? Mm-hmm. Any man or woman without hope.
That's
any
right.
Individual without hope. You don't want to be around anybody without hope. They're liable
That's
to do
right.
anything.
That's
who
right.
is the most pitiful individual in the room? The man or woman with sight but no vision.
Vision.
So the bottom line, we're not here to set it right. We're here to see it rightly.
That's
Master,
right.
We fished all day and we haven't caught a thing. Well, this time, cast your nets on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
Not in terms of right versus left, Daphne, but in
mm-hmm.
terms of your thinking.
Thinking.
The economy is always in mind. The ancestor to every action is a thought. Now, I'm not going to sit here and talk to you, you know, on this radio and say, all you got to do is, you know, put rose-colored glasses on and everything's going to be fine and this, that, and everything. No, this is still going to be difficult. It's still going to be
right.
highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line, Daphne, I mean, success in life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. It's okay to put the rose-colored glasses on, but at the same time, you got to roll your sleeves up. We got to go to the plow. Because if we refuse not to go to the plow, then we are going to end up on the other side. I love the title of the book, Wealth Choice.
And that's exactly what it is. It's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, living in a free and open society, we can make 50 million different choices on a daily basis. You chose what outfit you're going to wear. You chose what road you took to the radio station. I chose what time I was going to get up this morning. Now, many of these choices, Daphne, we don't have to address, we don't have to make. We can put off to a later time. But there are two choices. As soon as we wake up and look in that mirror, you must address and you must make. Number one, you can accept the circumstances as they are. Or number two, you can take the responsibility to change them. And all the interviews and through the surveys and through the focus groups. Now, we're talking there are roughly 35,000 black millionaires in the United States. And over a seven-year period, I know that I interacted with close to 1,000. And at any point in their life when they started out, Daphne, 99.9% of them were either broke or poor. They all started off at the ground floor, zero.
That's
but
right.
like I said, they made that choice. They, you know, all right, these are the circumstances, but I'm not accepting them.
Right.
I am making the choice to change. And here's
right.
the key. I had a great interview with a gentleman by the name of Victor McFarland. Victor McFarland is the founder of McFarland Partners, real estate investment company out on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there are 35,000 black millionaires in the United States, and there are 5 black billionaires in the United States. But, Daphne, there were 5 other individuals who were ready to join the ranks of the Bob Johnsons and Oprah Winfreys of the world, but they couldn't hold it because of the last recession, and one of them was Victor McFarland. His business last year did more than $600 million. So here's the key. I'm interviewing him, and he tells me that he was born and raised in Middletown, Ohio, which is a blue-collar, working-class community, single-parent household, raised by his mother in a one-bedroom apartment. And in that one-bedroom apartment, the bedroom was for his mother, but in that bedroom apartment, they had a couch. And for the first 12 years of his life, that couch in that apartment substituted as the bed that he and his older sister slept on. And when he shared that with me, I said, Victor, that had to be tough, you know, sleeping on that couch for the first 12 years of your life. And he said, no, don't feel sorry for me. No sympathy, no empathy whatsoever. Those were probably the best 12 years of my life. And I said, why would you say that? He said, because it was during those 12 years that I made a conscious decision that poverty would have no place in my life.
Wow.
At the at the counter of success, Daphne, and you tell your listeners to highlight what I'm saying. You
mm-hmm.
tell them to underscore what I'm saying. You tell them to get close to the radio or whatever,
mm-hmm.
close to the computer. This is blog talk. At the counter of success, there are no bargains. You
That's
must
right.
pay the price in advance mm-hmm. and in full.
That's right. That's right. I love what you say, because too often, when you hear people have this conversation about wealth, they always have a feeling as if people are spoon-fed. But as you rightfully say, the playing field for all of these people were leveled. They all started at the ground floor and built themselves up.
That's the quickest way up. Start at mm-hmm. the bottom. And listen, mm-hmm. I didn't say that. Booker T. Washington said that years
yep.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
What did Booker T. Washington say? He said, start where you are with what you have, knowing that what you have is plenty enough. You want to get to the top? Well, start at the bottom. And that's exactly what these men and women did. You know, and I love the content. You know, people will read this book and they'll see the title, The Wealth Choice, and they think this
mm-hmm.
is about money, and they think this
mm-hmm.
is about finances. Nothing could be further from the truth. Oh, yes,
that's right.
I highlight so many stories, and I share so many interviews where folks did start at zero and created their empire. But what this book is really about, Daphne, this book is not about cash. This
mm.
book is about courage.
Courage.
It takes courage
Thank
to
you.
Chase your dream, Daphne.
That's right.
It takes
right.
courage to save and invest.
Yes.
It takes courage to turn your back on today and
mm.
focus on tomorrow.
That's
it
right.
takes courage, Daphne, to
mm-hmm.
find a new set of friends. It takes courage to get up off your you-know-what,
mm-hmm.
go to the bookstore, buy the book, read the book, highlight the book, implement everything in the book, and then give the book away to somebody else so they could change their life.
Their life
That's
too.
The type of courage I'm talking about.
Talking about. Woo. Thank you. You know, you have invested so many years, as a matter of fact, all of your life, in going around. Have you seen that the barriers between wealth for black and white, they're slightly complicated in some ways?
No, there isn't any difference. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that African Americans aren't going to hit roadblocks or encounter obstacles that other groups will certainly avoid or won't address, because you and I know that that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, I'd tell anybody, you know, if you had to walk a mile in our shoes, you would definitely trip. I mean, we're going to hit all the bumps in the roads. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. So get over it. You know, am I going to sit here and talk to you on the radio and say there's no such thing as racism, there's no such thing as discrimination? I'm the father of three daughters and two granddaughters. I tell them right now, am I going to say there's no such thing as sexism? Not me. I mean, racism, discrimination, and sexism is like rain, Daphne. If it isn't falling, it's off somewhere gathering. You
mm.
cannot control that. The
That's
only
right.
thing you can control is how you respond. The
mm-hmm.
only thing that you can control is how you react. The only thing you can control is your mindset, and that's the good news, because this game set, wealth creation, is all mindset. Wealth creation is pain-inducing. Wealth creation is gut-wrenching. Wealth convenience is a marathon, not a sprint. Wealth convenience, the wealth choice is built on inconvenience, you know, but the bottom line is it's a lot easier than failing.
That's right. That's right. Dr. Kimrow, your new book, The Wealth Choice, how are the principles that you expose in this book different from that of Napoleon Hill did in Think and Grow Rich?
Well, you know, Dr. Hill came up with 17 surefire precedents, attributes for success. Definiteness of purpose all the way to cosmic habit force. Now, you know, his first four, definiteness of purpose, mastermind, applied faith, and going the extra mile, Hill tells you those are the big four. And the only reason why he came up with principles 5 through 17 was to get you to use the first four. If
mm-hmm.
you pick up the original Think and Grow Rich, he tells you within the first 30 pages, there is a secret buried in these first 30 pages that if you use at the center point of your life, there isn't anything that you can't have, do, or become. And what is he trying to share? It's desire. What is it that you desire? And why did Hill talk about that? Because he knows that, you know, you become what you think about. Whatever you hold in your mind expands. And that is the spiritual language. Desire is the key. And the wealth choice is the same way. You know, I found seven principles, seven attributes. And that's why the subtitle of the book featuring the seven laws of wealth. I found seven laws of wealth that these black millionaires not only internalize, but encapsulate on a daily basis in their life. And number one is knowledge. I mean, prosperity and wealth begins in the mind, but it ends in the purse. The average black millionaire, Daphne, almost reads a book a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's four books a month. That's four books
wow.
a month. That's about 50 books a year. And they do that in a society that is pulling away, you know, from reading. I mean, yeah, we text and we send, you know, we tweet and we do everything. But to actually sit down, read the information, you know, implement the information and use the information as the next step on your path to wealth, more and more need to do this. Now, why is that critically important? Because we live and have our being in a capitalist economy. As I said on a TV show, capitalism is not a dirty word. Capitalism means everything is for sale. You take the Latin derivative of the word capitalism, C-A-P-U-T, caput. What does it mean in Latin? Well, it means head. What's the one thing you must use in order to survive in a free and open society? You got to use your head. So wealth, the first law of wealth is knowledge. We live and have our being in a capitalist society that is predicated upon one fact and one fact only, Daphne. If you want to earn more, then you must learn more.
Learn more. Beautiful. You know, there are so many, many people now who don't even have a library card. And the library card gives them access to go to the library and get the book for free. So I just hope people will listen to this and take it to heart, because while you are breathing up God's good oxygen, you must keep learning, keep learning, keep learning. One of my pet peeves in life is when people tell me that, oh, I'm too old to learn, I'm too old to this. And with access to the internet right now, you don't even have to leave your home. You can learn as much as you want so long as you have a computer. So, I mean, if we would end this segment of this show right now, you would have gotten enough to go out there and change your life. What are some of the biggest success secrets, Dr. Kimbrough?
Oh, I've found it over and over again through the countless interviews that I had. Had a great interview with Bishop T.D. Jakes, and you talk about, you know, learning and growing. What your listeners may or may not know, he never finished high school, though he did go back and attain his GED. And, you know, he was darn near run out of Charleston, West Virginia, simply because they told him he would never make it in the ministry because he has such a heavy lisp. But the day that I got a chance to spend with him one-on-one in his book-lined study back at the Potter's House, I sort of brought that up in the conversation, and he shared with me, he said, you know, my critics weren't altogether wrong. The lisp is still there. You could hear it. He said, but I don't care if I had to spit. I don't care if I had to stammer. I don't care if I had to stutter. I had something to say, and I was going to say it. Now, he left West Virginia with only four members of his church, and look at the Potter's House right now. More than 30,000 members, 191,000 square feet, $45 million facility. And what did he have to say, you know, in terms of wealth creation and growth? He says, give a man a fish, feed him for a day. Teach him how to fish, feed him for a lifetime. But show him how he can buy the pond, and no one in his family will ever know struggle.
Wow, wow. And I remember, I think it was at the Power Networking Conference, too, when he shared his grandmother's story. Because his grandmother was working for one of the wealthy families, and she went back to school to study in her late years. So it's in his DNA to be committed and to make the right choices, because she was there ironing for the white people, as he put it, during the day, and she found herself back at school in the evening, and I think she was like 80-something when she got a degree. So I tell you, there is so much out there for us to model from. You only fail if you choose to fail. Dr. Kimbrough, what make you decide to focus on wealth and success for this particular book?
Well, you know, I had always had this in my particular DNA. I have studied wealth from so many different angles, and I really wanted to pinpoint, the cause of it. And there's no better way to do that than to sit down with the folks who actually achieve some level of prosperity and abundance. When Tom Stanley wrote The Millionaire Next Door, he used three primary sources of data. He used Census Bureau, U.S. Trust Survey, and IRS information. And his second year into the research, he contacted the Census Bureau and to find out how many white millionaires in the United States. And it was during that conversation that the Census Bureau not only told him how many white millionaires in the United States, close to 9 million, they gave him zip codes as to where they live. And so Stanley went back and he wrote a 247-question survey, and based upon the zip codes provided by the Census Bureau, he stapled a dollar bill to the survey and he stuffed mailboxes. And the bottom line, he got an unbelievable response rate back. Mm-hmm. Well, more than 5 years ago in this seven-year journey that I just completed, I not only contacted the Census Bureau, but I paid them a visit. I went down to the regional office here in Atlanta on Peachtree Street, and I got a chance to talk with a couple of social scientists who work for the Census Bureau, hoping to gain insight in terms of African America and their wealth creators. Number one, they didn't even know how many black millionaires there were, let alone, you know, give me addresses. But I went over to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve told me about 35,000, or there are about 112,000 African-American households with a net worth of $1 million or more. And I didn't want to focus in on households. I want to focus in on actual individuals, wealth creators. So when Martin Luther King led the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955, Daphne, there were only five black millionaires in the United States. And I had the opportunity to interview three of those five, and I shared their story in Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice. Today, more than, 50, 60 years later, now we have about 35,000 black millionaires, which is really nothing to shout about. That equates to 0.1%. So what am I saying? What am I saying, Daphne? Tell your listeners there's so much opportunity out there for them to join the ranks of the seven-figure financial elite.
That's right. We just have to learn to not be so selfish, and because there are a lot of people who are so selfish. They are hoarding whatever little they have, and they don't want to go out there, as we spoke at the top of the hour, to collaborate and learn from others who are doing it and to build wealth. But
well, you're not going to do it if you're selfish, because the fifth law of wealth is how may I serve thee.
You see,
people will make you rich or people will make you poor depending on how well you serve. You know, you've got to give unto others. I mean, whatever, you can have anything in life that you want. All you got to do is earn it. And how do you earn it? By serving. I mean, here is the formula for compensation, Daphne. Make sure, I hope your listeners are tuned in. Q plus Q plus MA equals C. The quality of your service plus the quantity of your service plus the mental attitude in which it is rendered always equals compensation.
Would you say that a little slower, please?
Q plus Q plus MA equals C. The quality of your service plus the quantity of your service plus the mental attitude in which it is rendered always equals compensation. People will make you rich or people will make you poor depending upon your level of service.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I have another question, and as a female, because this is the costume that I wear, I got to ask this question. You have mentioned one of the person that you interviewed over the 7 years. I would love for you to tell us about some of the others. And how many of these in this conversation were female?
I interviewed half, about 40%, 40 to 45% of the interviews that I had were black females.
Yes.
Now, in terms of black millionaires, black females are anywhere from 12 to 15%, and that number is growing. When you look at the data, and I share all the data in the book, the average black millionaire is 52 years old. The average black millionaire, born and raised in the Northeast and Southeast, 60% of them come from families in which both mother and father were present, and usually the mother did not work. When you look at high school and college, more than 60% attended college, and the bulk of which they not only earned their degree, but one out of five has done graduate work. Black females, the college GPA of black female was 3.4, black males 2.9. They all broke 1,000 on the SAT. In terms of church membership, the average black millionaire attends church twice a week. That means Sunday service and either Wednesday Bible study or some type of auxiliary board meeting. Black females tithe. They give 10% of their earnings to the church, where black males give 10 to 15% of their earnings to charity. So I break all that information down in terms of the profile, the demographic of the average black millionaire. But one number sticks up in my mind, Daphne. One question, one of the 118 questions that I asked, I said, what age were you when you broke six figures? What age were you when you earned $100,000 a year or more? And that came back age 30. So wow. I tell my readers and I tell the listeners and whatever, be very careful where you are in life at age 30. Because if you don't like where you are at age 30, chances are you're going to be there for the rest of your life.
Wow. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I must be honest. I why am I echoing? I want to tell the listeners that I have not yet read the book. I have ordered it. It didn't get here. But I'm telling you, after I've read it, I'm sure we're going to have Dr. Kimro back. So, oh, my God, there's so much. We only have 8 minutes remaining and so much to talk about. If you could give us a starting point, because there are some people who are over age 30 and they want to, like, dismantle where they are and pick this book up and make a difference. Where do we need to start?
Well, number one, start with yourself. You know, like I said, number one is knowledge. You know, the pocketbook can't grow until the mind grows. So you've got to take in the information. Number two, you got to make a conscious decision. You have got to decide. And once you decide, you never let an exception occur. That is the key. That is the hallmark to personal empowerment. Number three, you got to believe in yourself when no one else will. Got to have the faith. So many times during the course of these interviews, I mean, these folks had a deep-seated spiritual faith. I had a great interview with Kathy Hughes. As you know, Kathy Hughes is one of the five black billionaires. And so many folks say they want to be an entrepreneur, and so many folks they want to create wealth and everything. And I tell them, would you do what Kathy Hughes did? I mean, she quit counting at more than 60 rejections trying to find the funding for her first radio station. And then after she got the funding, for more than a year, that was her home. She slept on the floor of her radio station with a small child in tow. And the restroom down at the end of the corridor, that was her bathroom for more than a year. Damon John, the same way. Great interview with Damon John, the founder of FUBU. He quit counting at more than 30 rejections before he got funding. And I asked him, I said, Damon, if you could do anything over again, what would you have done? He said, number one, I would have gone to college. I would have got my degree in marketing because I didn't have the slightest idea what I was doing. It took me 6 years to launch the FUBU apparel line. And by the time I launched it, it was already outdated. I said, what was the turning point in your life? He said, when I had to burn the furniture. I said, what do you mean burn the furniture? He said, when I finally achieved and I was granted the funding, I had to hire all these seamstresses and these sewing machines, and I had no place to put it. I said, I had to take all the furniture out of my mother's house, put it in the backyard, set it on fire to create the space for my sewing machines. I mean, that's rock bottom faith.
Wow.
Focus on your unique gifts, number four. Go serve somebody, number five. You've got to be in business for yourself. And when I say be in business for yourself, that is a mental attitude, which is number six. And then last but not least, Daphne, make your money grow. Watch your spending habits. These black millionaires are extremely frugal. So this is what I want your listeners to do. Number one, I want them to go buy the book. Number two, I want them to read the book. I want them to highlight it. I want them to really digest what their wealth creators are saying. Next, I want them to go ahead and, you know, implement everything that's in the book. And then I want them to give the book away, because this is a revolution, a grassroots revolution that is taking place in our community right now.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I would like for you to please give out your contact information for those people who want you to come and visit their organization. And
I can be reached at denniskimbrough.com. You can go to my website, denniskimbrough.com, or you can hit me up on Facebook, or you can hit me up on Twitter. My books are available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I'd love to meet and greet you. I know that this radio station is all across the globe, and hopefully we can connect through the virtual highway, but I look forward to meeting you in person.
Dr. Kimbrough, thank you so much for your commitment and your decision in making our lives better. On behalf of my listeners and myself, we are making a commitment to hold this torch high. We are not going to allow anyone or any circumstances to allow us to linger under the umbrella of mediocrity. Thank you for being a mentor. Thank you for being a role model. And most of all, thank you for being a loud voice across this world to let us all know that poverty is a choice.
Daphne, thank you very much, and God bless.
God bless you, Dr. Kimbrough. Thank you, thank you, thank you so very much.
No problem.
Yes, yes, yes. You have heard it from the master himself, Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. Oh, what a conversation. I just can't wait to read the book. And I tell you, there is so much that is happening out there for us, as people and as entrepreneurs. And when we make the decision that we want more for ourselves, there is more to be had. But we must make that decision that we are no longer going to settle. And with that being said, this leads us into our next segment, segment two, which is brought to you by one of our movers and shakers in the entrepreneurial arena, Dr. Dina Murphy.
If you're a woman of faith, you've got to attend Designing Your Personal Awesome Future with Dr. Deanna Murphy on April 6th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Fort Washington, PA. If you're ready to renovate, redesign, and renew your soul, join Dr. Deanna, America's expert on life design, as she helps you to let go of your past, identify solutions for fear of failure, experience inner healing, and much more. Register now at myawesomefuture.eventbrite.com.
All right, so this is on April the 6th down in Pennsylvania. So make your way there. You listen to what Dr. Kimbrough just said. I forget what percentage. I tell you, this is one segment I'm going to be listening over and over and over again. But one book a week. There are some people who have not been reading two books a year. And these millionaires read one book a week. So it's time to shake up and ask ourselves the question, what have we been doing for ourselves that is helping us to propel? You hear everybody talk about wanting to go to the next level. And if you are not acquiring knowledge, if we are not consistently acquiring knowledge, we are not going to be moving from where we are. Guest 2328, I want you to call in and tell us what you thought about what Dr. Kim Rowe spoke about, and how do you connect to that. In the meantime, I want to offer some insights here from the book with Michael E. Gerber, Awaken the Entrepreneur Within. And I think this is a great conversation to follow up the conversation that Dr. Kim Rowe just gave us. Next Wednesday and the Wednesdays moving ahead, I know that we will have two experts on. So we're going to have one from 10 to 11 and the other from 11 to 12. My second person for today had a conflict, and I could not find enough time to replace her with somebody else. So this is the reason why we don't have a second person on. So if you are listening to the conversation with Dr. Kim Rowe, I want for you to please call in and let us just talk about that for a little bit. Tell us what your thoughts were. Did it awaken any, did you get any aha moments from what Dr. Kim Rowe said? I enjoy when he mentioned about all the millionaires started from the bottom up. Everybody had a level playing field, because a lot of times you hear people say, oh, well, their parent is rich and that is rich and the other is rich. But all these people made their wealth by starting from the bottom and moving up. So if you have an insight that you want to share, that you gather from the from the conversation with Dr. Kimbrough, please call 646-915-8166. I want to, you heard him mention about all of these millionaires. All of the millionaires dream big dreams. And as he rightfully said, I can't wait to get my hand on the book. This book is not about money. It's about a mindset, which is what we are doing for these next 6 weeks, is talking about the millionaire mindset. So in this book, Awaken the Entrepreneur Within, with Michael E. Gerber. And Michael is the founder of The Dreaming Room and the creator of The Dreaming Room. And here is what Michael says in chapter 7, the personal dream. This dream is the natural state of man. We live in this dream as we live in the air, and would be hopeless if we were not able to realize something, that we live not only in this world, but also in another world, where it is possible for us to awaken to a different perception, to another way of being and thinking and of feeling. The act of waking up can change everything, it is to be born to another world within oneself. And this is from Henry Tackle. This just affirms what Dr. Kim Rose said, that we are all born for a purpose. And we got to make sure to follow through on that purpose. We got to look about ourselves first with the acquired knowledge. We got to decide what we want to do. We got to believe in ourselves when nobody else believes in you. You got to follow your unique gift. Michael continues and he says, there are many kinds of dreams. There is the dream of the lonely man or woman. There is the dream of the lustful lover. There is the dream of the old man wishing to become young, of the young man wishing to be old, of the spinster wishing for a companion, of the companion wishing for a lover. There is the dream of the Big D student wishing for a good grade, for the single mother wishing her son would get a job, of the plain man wishing for beauty. All of these dreams are that can, what we can be called personal dreams. They, and so many more, just like them, from the sublime to the absurd, from the realistic to the fantastic, are what consume most people most of the time. For most of us, they remain dreams of longing and personal desire. But even when such dreams convert into action, they rarely, if ever, produce the desired result. They may become goals, but the goals themselves are suspect once one has achieved them. Once one is made less plain by the surgeon's knife, once one has found his or her lover, once one has built a 5,000 square foot house on the hill with a swimming pool behind it, once one has created those incredible abs about exercising for months after strenuous, painful months, still, each and every one of these personal dreamers find themselves exactly at the end longing for more, for better, for indefinable, something the dream was to have provided but never does. And then it goes on. A bigger house, a bigger tan, a faster car, a more responsive lover. All these personal dreams are found out to be, if we are lucky, not only empty, but foolish, are therefore tragic waste of time. They never deliver the goods our imagination so hopefully promised us. They never give us more life. I call these personal dreams insurmountable dreams. Insurmountable because when they are fulfilled, we are now in need of other dreams to pursue, to replace them. There is no end to them. They are the fuel that energizes our otherwise desperate lives. They are the promise. At the end of our personal rainbow, they are not only what we dream about as kids, who or what we want to be when we grow up, the fame, the fortune, the hero, the adventurer, but they follow us and fuel us for the rest of our lives as adults. Yet, even when we become the hero we dreamed about, even when we become the next Tiger Woods in, it is never enough. The personal dream always disappoints us. It's as though it has prelude to life, not life itself. The shine of it goes away, the joy of it goes away, the look of it goes quickly away. It is as if there can be no rest from the continued disappointment of a personal dream. In time, doesn't anything personal leave us longing for something else personal? That is why the awakening the entrepreneur does not awaken the personal dream, but rather the impersonal one. And that's just affirming that we got to harness our why. Why are we in this world? What we are doing cannot be about us. It must be about somebody else, making a difference in somebody else's life or in some other way. Once we are selfish, you heard Dr. Kim Rowe said, you cannot be selfish because we are going to be compensated for what we do. He mentioned about Q plus MA equals to compensation. The quality of what we do plus the quantity plus the mental attitude, he says, is going to be equal to the compensation that we get. I love that. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I am going to have to put that one in my journal as a daily reminder. It is also going to be going on my vision board. Because as I work on my resilience intelligence, what better tool to use than a Q plus MA? And that will give us a clear focus on a vision. Now, Michael, give a little exercise here. He says, stop and focus. The personal dream. How many personal dreams have you had? Write them down, as many as you remember. What happens to them? How many cars have you bought? What happened to them? How many awards have you sought? What happened to you after you won them? How many new things have you bought? What happened to them after you bought them? Stop and focus on the nature of personal dreams. What do they feel like when you first have them? When you begin to pursue them, when you either succeed or realize them or fail to do so, what is the reality of personal dreams in your life? Feel what it means. So, be you when you are pursuing the fulfillment of your personal dream. Feel what it means to be when you succeed in getting what you wanted. See the continuity of your life as it goes from one personal dream to another, And yet another, stop and focus on the nature of personal dreaming. Feel it as deeply as you can. Remember, you can call 646-915-8166. And let's talk about what does a millionaire mindset means for you. For those of you who have listened to my honored guest, Dr. Dennis Kimrow, author of his newest book, The Wealth Choice, call me in and let me know what you thought about his conversation this morning. We are continuing with Awakening the Entrepreneur Within. The impersonal dream, and this is from Paul Klee. Everything vanishes around me, and works are born as if out of the void. Rip graphic fruits all off, fall off. My hand has become the obedient instrument of a remote will. What do I mean when I say the impossible dream? I mean just that. It is anything but personal. It is not about you, and it is not about me. It is about the act of creativity, about that sudden seeing of a possibility we have never seen before. When we suddenly become aware, intensely aware of some condition, some reality, some frozen particle of time and space that is just dying to be fixed or changed or reinvented or transformed. Because of what we as entrepreneurs do about that which we dream, there exists a reality that brings more happiness into the world than was or wasn't there before. A woman in poverty can live without poverty. A light is turned on in a little hut where there is no electricity. Water flows clear and clean. Where the water was once inadequate and filthy, children who were starving now have food because someone found a way to produce it. A young, up-and-coming executive learns the key, the skill she needs to get ahead. On a lot less ambitious scale, a cell phone became a camera. A camera becomes a television. A car becomes a boat. A boat, an airplane. Today, a business can be put anywhere we want it to be because we can now do whatever we wish to do from anywhere. It's all impersonal to the one who creates it, but it is personal to the one who buys it. The impersonal, in its context, simply means it's not about me. Do you get what I mean? Entrepreneurship is nothing about the one who creates a thing, and everything about the one who consumes a thing. Entrepreneurs don't care about the thing they create in and of itself as much as they may love what they produce or do. They care about creating it because of the impact it can have on someone else. It's about that thing as an answer to a question others have long ago stopped asking, or long before they've been considered the possibility of its changing for them. The first question for the awakening entrepreneur is, what good would this thing I am thinking of creating do for one who buys it? And why is that important? And how long will that be important? For, after all, to the entrepreneur, the company he or she is about to create is not a disposable thing, but a thing that will hopefully last for a lifetime. The thing an entrepreneur is inventing is of value to the degree it has lasting value. To whom? To the customer. To the one who consumes it. Do people consume companies? Yes, of course they do. A great company is consumable to the degree it was invented. Only with the customer in mind, its stocks is consumed in that people buy it. Its products are consumed in that people buy them. Its services are consumed to the degree that people buy them and use them and enjoy them and benefit from them. So, a company that is created as a product of a truly impersonal dream, which is not about the entrepreneur but about the customer, is what entrepreneurs always create. No matter how much they believe in it, can't live without it, consume it themselves because they love what they invented and can't imagine anyone else not loving it, the entrepreneur knows that there is only one justified reason for creating a company: to serve someone else's desire better than anyone has ever done before. Here's where that gets tricky. The awakening the entrepreneur in this new age of the entrepreneur makes choice for his or her customer long before the customer does. The customer is not aware that he wants what the entrepreneur invents, not until long after the entrepreneur has invented it. In fact, you might ask customers if they want something the entrepreneur intends to invent, and for the life of them, they couldn't tell you why in the world anyone would want such a thing, or why such a business would be important or meaningful or desirable at all. A fax machine wasn't invented because anyone wanted one. A television set wasn't invented because anybody wanted one. A car chair wasn't invented because anyone wanted one. In fact, it took a long, long time for anyone to participate, to appreciate, an automobile, even though it was available for customers to buy. The same principle applies to a refrigerator, a dishwasher, or a hairdryer, or a lawnmower, that you drive like a tractor because now you can. What husband ever said to his wife, "I need a tractor to mow our lawn"? She would have thought he was nuts. What an entrepreneur creates has meaning, and that's why it is, and that's why it creates money. It doesn't work the opposite way. Creating money does not give the created thing meaning. But meaning in its new age, in this new age of entrepreneur, in this renaissance of meaning, in its new world where meaning is all the rage, this meaning means something significantly greater than just any old meaning. The meaning of meaning in this age of the new entrepreneur means that you must reach further than simple to do something meaningful. Making a good tire, bake a good pizza, deliver a good shoe shine, or whatever else you have gone into to do. You must reach much higher, much further, to a point beyond the ordinary. You must reach much, much deeper than simple creating more choices or lower prices or faster delivery. No! In this age of the entrepreneur, in this age of the impersonal dreamer, you must kick ass in ways no other one has possible done. At the outset, Arnie and I, says Michael, I were not as much in disappointment as it was if we were living in different worlds. His was the world of work. Mine was the world of creating what works. Arnie was full up with doing the work of his business, writing ads, creating advertisement strategies, designing advertisement and marketing campaigns. I was full up with the question of building a progress and a system through which Arnie's work would translate into sales for his clients. The clients wanted that. As a result, the clients wanted me. Clients turned into clients, two which quickly turned into client six. I now had an office in Arnie's advertising agency, working with his clients to add value to his service by giving his clients ready, by getting his clients ready for the leads that would come their way once the ads did what they were supposed to do. Arnie had never gone into the process with his clients that deeply before. It was as though Arnie had set a limit to what his company was supposed to do. There was a broader Arnie never crossed into his client's business, the border called inside the business. Arnie sent leads to the client's door and went back to the media to get more. Sometimes sales were made and other times there weren't. But according to Arnie's philosophy, that wasn't his job. It was the client's job. That felt like a strange thing to me. How would he draw such an artificial line? If the lead was dropped at the client's door, wouldn't it be only natural to Arnie to walk in with it and say, so how, now that we are doing, going to do with this? But Arnie didn't, so I did. And that created a lot of new business for Arnie's advertising agency, but a lot of problems as well. Suddenly, Arnie's clients expected him to walk, to lead into the door and follow it wherever it went from there. That was my job, but it became Arnie's job as well. After all, if a lead was not converted into a sale, it put the ad that attracted it into the question. Without warning, Arnie was immersed in questions he had never really bothered or intended to ask. What kind of leads was he generating? Of what value were those leads? Did they convert easily? If so, why? If not, why? What that introduced Arnie to an unfamiliar new world, the world of the systems thinker. The world where I unwittingly found myself with Arnie at my side and us saying to each other, what in the world is this? I love it. Arnie hated it because it really muddled up the simple world in which he lived. This is exactly what I confronted in the dreaming room. I never would have anticipated that the pursuit of the impersonal could be so challenging to so many people. What do you want? I would ask a dreaming room participant. The response would be the description of a personal dream, a picture of the dreamer in the perfect house, in which the perfect family living the perfect life in a perfect world where everything was beautiful, where money was never a problem. But as Arnie, all anyone wanted in the dreaming room was work they loved to do so they would make the money they needed to get the things they wanted and more. To each and every dreaming room participant, that was what dreaming meant. And if their dream included was also all about them, as opposed to the creation. The creation is all in all cases was reflection of them. The dreaming room revealed to me how hopeless, non-narcissistic we all are. But as I dug deeper, as we pursued the question deeper, it also became apparent to me that people in the dreaming room were also longing for something bigger than they were. They were hoping for something to appear in their lives that would wake them up out of their narcissistic terror. They were, many of them, tired of themselves, tired of listening to themselves, looking at themselves, being with themselves, doing what they were hopelessly programmed to do every morning when they got up and every night when they got ready for bed. They were looking for something even though they had stopped looking. They were wishing for something even though many had stopped wishing. They were tired. That was it. They were bone weary tired, tired of living. It would never have imagined that to be true, that all of the people who came to the dreaming room had all but given up, even though their lives were chock full of doing whatever they were up to. They were resigned to ever truly figuring life out, business out, themselves out. Who am I? Was the question they all had long ago stopped asking in favor of what's next. Stop and focus. The impersonal dream. This is more difficult than you could ever imagine. Trying to come to the place where you don't matter and only the customer matters. Stop and focus on what? Stop and focus on that for a moment. See the customer. See him, see her. The only thing that matters to the entrepreneur is what his or her customer wants. The entrepreneur wants to treat his or her customer better than anyone else. It goes out, not in. That's exactly where the entrepreneurial focus must go. Out, not in. Do you see why the invention of a business of your own has nothing to do with that, with what you want? Unless, of course, what you want has only to do with your customers, not with you. That the impersonal dream lives in someone else and not in you. That the sudden scene of that, the amazing clarity about that, the excitement that comes from that is where the true entrepreneur action is. Stop and focus on an impersonal dream. Name one, then two, then three. Go as far long as you can. Focus on a customer who needs something he or she can't get, who wants something no one yet has provided to him or her. You are right now beginning the true work of entrepreneur. And to do that work truly, you must stop and focus for as long, as deep, and as possible can. You possibly can. Yes, this is where the action is. This is the beginning of a dream that has a meaning. The sudden shock When a man journeys into far country, he must be prepared to forget many of the things he has learned and to acquire such customs that are inherent with existence in the new land. He must abandon the old ideals and the old gods, and oftentimes he must reverse the very codes by which his conduct has hitherto been shaped. And that's a quote from Jack London in Far Country. It happens to every one of us at one time or more times in our lives. If we are lucky, that is, what happens is a sudden shock. It is absolutely necessary component of the awakening the entrepreneur within us. No sudden shock, no dream worth pursuing. My sudden shock in 1975 was to see the world and each and every business within it as complete unified intelligence system. I saw at once it was not something that happened over time. Even though elements of it came to me over time, it struck me all at once. First, it wasn't there, then suddenly it was. This sudden shock that showed me how the world really was, and it happened in such an unpredictable way. I had been working with Arnie's clients, along with many new clients I began to create for Arnie with my new compelling story that I made up for Arnie. Finally, an ad agency that now only creates leads for your business, but shows you how to close them. Wow. An ad agency that had suddenly morphed into a sales agency. We didn't create ads, we create sales. Business began to boom for Arnie. And of course, if it boomed for Arnie, it would boom for me. Because I was the one on the firing line, I was the one who had to deliver on Arnie's ad agency promises. I was the one who not only sold new business Arnie was getting, but had to deliver the promise to them. And I did, in the form of selling a system that proved to transform Arnie's business as well as the client's business. But still, something was missing. It dogged my heels everywhere I went. Every small business I walked into seemed to be a collection of broken pieces and seemed to fail in the most fundamental ways. If the product worked, the people didn't. If the people worked, they worked far too hard for what they earned in return. When the money went up, the pleasure seemed to go down. People argued a lot, felt little satisfaction at what they did. The places were high-tech, but were very low energy. All the work seemed to spiral into many unpredictable fits at starts, and nobody seemed to have a handle on it. Nobody seemed to be able to explain the whole of it, only their part of it, if that. Understand, to me, in this world of engineers, life was amazing. I couldn't understand how anybody could get bored in such a highly charged environment. Everything in Silicon Valley was new. Miracles were being created everywhere you looked, but nobody seemed to appreciate it. To me, it was a candy store of opportunity. To everyone else, it seemed to be the business as usual. That wasn't completely true. Of course, there was a lot of excitement at Apple Computer. However, when I asked questions of managers at Apple about how their dealers' businesses worked, no one knew anything. It's their business. It's not our business. The Apple guys said, that's what the Apple guys said. And when I ask the same question of Apple dealers, he or she would look at me like I was a lunatic. What do you mean? That's how it was throughout Silicon Valley in those days. As I wandered from business to small business in 1975 to 1976, working my newborn sales system logic. And then in McDonald's, I suddenly saw it. Please accept my apology if you have read this before, dear reader, because I have said it in every single book, single one of my books, that if McDonald's was not my holy grail, it certainly was my Ray Kroc. And if I fail to tell you this, McDonald's, my throat's now, you will miss the entire point of the sudden shock that was awakened. It was as if I were born again. I walked into McDonald's, and on a bright day, I suddenly saw what was missing in every single business I had counseled. I saw the system. I saw the color of it. The shape of it, the size of it, the form of it, the amazing eloquence of it, the people of it, the rhythm of it, the sound of it, the bright white light of it, and the hustle and extreme bustle of it. So help me God. In this sudden moment, I felt McDonald's was as though it was some grand and glorious marching band. Did you ever see anything in garnished brass, primary colors, looks so grateful to be alive? Did you ever see kids whooping and hollering when they were simply working for a short change on a few measle dollars? Did you ever imagine you would create a happening in an hamburger stand where kids impatiently but thankfully stood in line to get their burgers and fries or Big Macs and their tiny, tiny toys? All of the kids' boxes with gizmos, gadgets, and puzzles and promises written all over it. Did you ever imagine something so profilic as an hamburger, a fry, or a Coke could make such a ruckus? Of course not. Or could anyone else? But Ray Kroc did and was blessed for having done it by countless millions of moms. No, billions. That's what I walked into that day. Those dates I failed to remember, but I will never forget the picture it created in my mind's eye. Wow, I thought I could do that. Anyone can if they see it, they feel it. If they understand the magic of it, anyone can. And with that thought of mine in mind, I rushed over to my next client's business to knock his unwary head off his shoulders with a story to beat the band. Stop and focus. Sudden shock. That lessons are important to awaken the entrepreneur within you. And did my story about McDonald's have anything to do with all of this? What impact did it have on my sudden seeing? That was the shock that I spoke about. Stop and focus. What does the shock have to do with your life? With your potential, with your dream, stop and focus. Make a list as quickly as you can on the shocks you have had in your life that enable you to see a truth that you had never seen before. What happened in each and every case? List the outcomes. Then stop and focus on each. Do not do anything. Just allow the experience to do what they do. Stop and focus and let your imagination do the rest. I just pray that today's segment has helped you in some way or another. I pray that awakening the entrepreneur, along with the wealth choice conversation with Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, has really ruffled your feathers in some way and will help you to have your story that you too will be calling this radio show in the future to say that March the 13th, 2013 was my day of awakening when I made the decision to acquire knowledge, to decide what I want to do, to believe in me, to operate from my unique gifts. You must believe in yourself and in your dreams even when nobody else is. Live. Remember, you have a dream. For this is what we do. Put one foot forward and then another. Lift our eyes to the snarls and smiles of the world once more. Think, act, feel. Add our little consequence to the tides of good and evil and flood and drain the world. Drag our shoulders across into the hope of another night. Push our brave hearts into the promise of a new day with love. The passionate search for the truth and not other than our own. with longing and pure, infallible yearning to be saved. For so long as faith keeps waiting, we live on. God help us. God forgive us. We live on. This is a quote from Gregory David Roberts. Find your dreams. I want you to make a decision that 2013 is your year, and you are going to just focus and make a wealthy choice. Remember, it's inside of you. You got to make the decision to harness it and to embrace it. You heard the story of many, many people who are doing that. I encourage you to pick up that book from Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. Pick up the book, A Healthy Choice, and read it. Highlight it, and he said, give it away. If you're like me, you want to keep it and reworking it, and buy the others that you want to give away. Because I have found out that for every time that I reread something, I see something that I did not see before. I love to keep the books that I've read over and over and over in my library to use as research and to keep acquiring knowledge. But I tell you, you owe it to yourself to rush out there or go on Amazon and pick the book up. I just pray that today will be the first day of the rest of your empowered lives. And all I can say is that I am happy that I was able to be a part of this. Go out there and let your light so shine. Remember that which you were called to do, your why. It's not for you. It's for somebody else. Do not hold the world hostage from your greatness. Go out there and give to your world. You are called for a destiny. I want you to go out there with your destiny song singing so brilliant inside of you. Go out there, touch lives, make a difference. Go out there with a pep in your step, a humming in your voice, because you know, yes, I can make a difference. I look forward to seeing you again on Sunday evening, when we will focus on a segment with life issues. And next Wednesday, I will see you again when I will have two of my experts on, continuing the conversation on a millionaire mindset. I pray that you are now harnessing and embracing a millionaire mindset. So long, see you then, stay blessed, and I love each and every one of you.
What's the place that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
My destiny. I dare you to declare it.